Hello, and welcome to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. This is where we look at various nutrition and fitness-related topics through the lens of application. We want to give you practical takeaways so that you can create your healthiest, best self backed by knowledge. Now, onto the episode with your host, Coach Lisa.
Hello, and welcome back to the Nutrition and Life Podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Melissa McCreary, psychologist, author, and emotional eating expert. I'm super excited to talk to her today because I know all these topics are super relevant for all of you listeners. So Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Awesome. Well, to kick things off, I would just love to hear a little bit about you. Who are you? How did you get to where you are today into this space in terms of emotional eating? Tell us a little bit about your path.
Well, I'm a clinical psychologist, and I have worked with women and weight and food and their bodies and every which way that you could tangle those up for my entire career, which is been multiple decades now. I've been doing this for a long time. And along the way, I was really, well, as a young psychologist coming out into the field, working with women, women would come to me, they would talk to me about their issues with food. They would talk to me about stuff they hadn't told people before. And I was all about, and continue to be all about, helping people end these struggles. And by end, I do not mean find a plan that you can do for the rest of your life and stay in control and be strong with, but end these things, dissolve them, leave them behind. And much to my surprise, as a psychologist, I found that was not what other professionals were teaching. That was not the expectation that medical people were giving women, or anybody for that matter. The whole model around food and eating and weight was based on self-control. Mm-hmm. And all the effort that goes into that. And yet I knew from my own history and from the work that I was doing with clients that you can, like I said, you can end this stuff, you can leave it behind. And I think what happened is that one day I literally was sitting across from one too many incredible women who had done incredible things in their life, who would like, you know, fighting legal battles and mastering the art of being at four soccer tournaments at the same time and just being superhuman. And yet they're sitting there looking at me and saying, I know this is something I will always struggle with. Mm-hmm. I know this is something I probably will never get a handle on, mm-hmm. right? I know this will always be an issue for me. And it's just not true. And so I have evolved into working online, coaching. The programs that I do are specifically focused on creating freedom from overeating, because I don't feel like that's a message that people are getting. And I know it's not the message that diet culture is giving people.
I actually got a little bit goosebumps, almost tearing up there as you were saying that some women say, that's something I will always struggle with, or that's always going to be in my path, because that thought alone is so sad, just being caught in that cycle, or feeling like you're a victim to food in that regard. And it also portrays what's going on in their heads and their limiting beliefs that are just by them phrasing it that way with that word of always, we're already setting ourselves up for that and making that part of our identity. So I am so happy that you work with women to dissolve that, because I personally have, of course there are times where I think, oh, I'm a little bit stressed, I want to eat more, or, you know, that sort of emotional eating patterns, if we want to call that. But, you know, I have not experienced real binge eating episodes due to some sort of thing, things like that. But I have felt food restriction in many other ways, in the sense that I have been trying to squeeze myself in various diets and so on, until I found food freedom through flexible dieting and essentially allowing myself to eat anything I want, but in moderation, learning to have things in moderation. So I know how much quality of life can be gained through that. So thank you so much for that beautiful work that you do. But perhaps to take this into the depths of emotional eating, maybe you can define for us what it even means or how emotional eating might even show up, because someone listening, they might be thinking, well, I don't sit on the couch crying because someone broke up with me, so I don't emotionally eat, or so sometimes I think we might not even be aware of it, and I think there are so many different facets of it.
I think that last piece is so important. There are so many different facets of it, and in fact, I feel like emotional eating has become this kind of buzzword, mm-hmm. and it's also attached to this incredibly impractical advice, which is that, oh, you should just recognize emotional eating and not give into it or not do it. If you're not hungry, don't eat. And I don't know, you know, how many listeners out there are rolling their eyes, because how's that work, right? It does not. So emotional eating is helpful to know about, and sometimes it isn't helpful to know about. And I'll say, it's not the whole piece of the puzzle, I guess. So the way I define emotional eating is when you are using food as a way to cope with feelings. When you are using, and that might be numbing, that may be trying to push down feelings, that might be trying to shift one feeling into another feeling to not feel this way, or to it could even be an energy thing, right? So trying to have a little bit more energy because you feel exhausted. And that brings me to the other piece, which is why sometimes it is not helpful enough to know that you are doing emotional eating. I've had a lot of clients say to me, okay, that's great. I know I'm stress eating, but there's nothing I can do about the stress, right? I'm stress eating because that is the only thing I can do here, and I need to finish this project, or I need to get through this week, or whatever it is. Emotional eating is triggered by emotions, and our ability to deal with emotions is triggered by, is impacted very deeply by something that, a term that I use, which is hidden hungers. So there are all sorts of reasons that especially smart, busy women overeat. There are specific triggers that are really common in the lives of high achieving people who are trying to do a lot of things, particularly women. Things like stress, things like being too busy, things like not getting enough sleep or being exhausted, not getting enough me time, not having self-care, being too hard on yourself. These are all things that trigger hidden hungers. And all of these hidden hungers make it incredibly difficult to deal with our emotions. So if I'm a stress eater, the simple advice is don't do it because you don't need food. The less simple but not really helpful advice is often, well, you just need to get rid of the stress. And sometimes that's helpful, but most people will look at you and they say, if I knew how to deal with the stress, I wouldn't be eating, right? And then a more nuanced and I think the really helpful approach is to look at, why is it so hard right now? So what is contributing? Are there other hidden hungers that have taken all your bandwidth so you don't have any energy to deal with the emotions? Or are there hidden hungers that are creating difficult emotions? Or do you really need tools? Do you really not know how to deal with the stress? Or do you really need to learn how to deal with anger in a different way? But so much of the time, it's more complicated than that, right?
Yeah, I thank you for explaining that to us in the sense of how it can show up. And of course, as a nutrition coach, I see small aspects of that. Most people have some kind of, I don't want to say disordered eating patterns. That makes it sound too severe. But, you know, if we restrict in certain instances and then overconsume in other instances, there are usually specific reasons for that. And you have just named a few, in the sense of stress being a super common one these days. I love how you said that just because a recommendation or I can present a solution doesn't mean that it's always helpful. That's like saying to a broke person, well, you just need to save more money, or
More money. It'll be fine.
Or even when it comes to weight loss, just eat less. It's fine. You know, like nowadays, in my opinion, hunger is actually only one of very many reasons why we eat. Social eating, like you said, things that we associate with childhood, thing like smells, de-stressing, all these kind of things. So I guess I'm curious of what or how you would advise someone who's recognizing perhaps, okay, I know I'm stressed. I know I probably don't eat enough during the day because I'm just rushing from one thing to another. I might try to get like a little bit of a shake in here or there, or maybe just a coffee on the go and a muffin or whatever. And then I come home, then my kids are finally in bed, and then I get to finally relax, maybe with my partner, maybe on my own, whatever it is. And that is like my holy hour that I almost look forward to the entire day. And now you're telling me I'm not allowed to eat during that time. So, or like, yeah, maybe that's going on exactly in her head. So how do we approach that?
Well, I think what you just did is describe so many women's lives, right? That is exactly what happens. But you described it also in a way that I think sometimes is a little bit more advanced, because when we're busy being in our lives, specifically when you have all this stuff going on, that you don't see the pattern. And it's not because you are not intelligent enough to see the pattern. It's that we live our life so often, and this culture encourages us to live life in reaction mode. And so we're so busy doing that we don't take a deep breath and step back and say, what is going on here? Why is it that every night I am out of gas and I'm just, all I want is the ice cream and I don't have the self-control? So the first piece is having the tools that can kind of start to give you the insight that you just described. And that's just as simple. And here's the thing. Most of my advice is very simple. Brains do not like simple advice. And so what happens is I will describe something and it is a very human response to roll your eyes and say, well, that's not going to do it. What I really need to do is go clean out my pantry or give up sugar or look into that intermittent fasting or one of these, you know, things that is circling around in your brain. But the thing is, there is a reason that you are eating. There is always a reason. And if you don't start there, somebody could come down from the heavens and hand you the most perfect food plan, and it is not going to help you because you still have these hidden hungers. The food is still, it's still calling the shots. It still has the power. And so we really have to start there. The psychology of overeating is so important in making permanent changes. So starting to practice this little thing I was talking about is starting to just take moments in your day to stop. 30 seconds, take a deep breath. Ask yourself, what do I know about what it is that I'm feeling? What do I know about what it is that I need right now? Just what do I know? Don't go into problem solving mode. Don't worry about executing on it. Don't worry about, but just starting to connect with yourself and pay attention to what's going on. Because otherwise, what happens for so many busy women, you are on autopilot all day long. You're in reaction mode. You're chasing your to-do list. And nothing stops until all of a sudden you collapse into this chair and you're kind of wondering, how did I get here? But I'm too tired to think about how I got here because now I'm out of bandwidth and I'm exhausted and I will just eat ice cream. You've heard that, I'm sure, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love all of that. So firstly, I think it's so important to develop awareness, or to realize that we need to have awareness before we can do anything else. So awareness around, when am I doing it? Where am I doing it? Is there a pattern behind that? Is that every time that I sit down on that couch, maybe even just, you know, not sitting on the couch, but literally a different location could be a different quote unquote trigger, or doing something else, getting the knitting thing out instead of grabbing some food? Or is it every time that my boss yells at me? Or is it every time that I have had a fight with my husband, or anything like that, like finding the pattern? But I love that you said, I'm not necessarily going into it with problem solving mode, because that puts a lot of pressure on you right then and there, versus saying, I just want to get that awareness and I just want to get the insight and then let that be it. Whatever follows after that, it might mean I finished the pint of ice cream, or it might just mean, you know, I might have a few more bites and leave that it, but without judgment, also literally just exactly. Kind of recognizing that. And I do think that's why working with someone, and that can be, you know, obviously someone as qualified as you, but maybe even just a coach as well to start off with anyway. Simply someone who helps you hold up a mirror sometimes and just say, like, okay, you told me two nights out of last week were higher, or you ate way more than you wanted to. And what was going on those days? Because sometimes we don't even realize, like you said, we're in that autopilot mode sometimes for years before someone rips us out of it, or maybe sometimes some something really horrible has to happen. And then we realize, okay, I need to change something. But otherwise, it's so hard to break out of that on your own. So, yeah.
And there's another piece to that, if I can say, which is, it's so overwhelming. And so what happens, even in the example that you gave, you gave a lot of pieces of information that are so true to life for so many people, right? I worked all day. I didn't have time to eat lunch. I was taking care of all the things. I was, you know, I'm stressed out. I'm tired. And so what happens is that let's say you take step one and you start to pay attention to the reasons, what's going on. Hidden hungers snowball. Hidden hungers go together. And so what happens inside our own heads, because this is the way brains work, is we start to see all the things and it starts to get overwhelming, right? So then, just like I said, knowing you're an emotional eater is not always so helpful. The first reaction is often, okay, great. I have all the hidden hungers. I have all of them. So what am I supposed to do? Quit my job, retire, move to Greece? You know, what am I, what's the answer? Again, small steps, which can be so incredibly impactful. One of the things I did was create a quiz that people can take, and it's not going to say, ding, 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 you have all the hidden hungers, you know, you're, it's hopeless. What it is going to do is identify what your primary hidden hunger is. What is most likely the primary driver behind your eating? And then give you some resources for here's some simple things. Doable. I'm all about doable. If it's not doable, I'm not going to tell you that. Like, what are some simple things that you can do to start to shift that one hunger? Because it is easy to see how things get overwhelming, how you get tired. And so then you get stressed and then you're too busy and then you can't deal with emotions. It's very easy to see that cycle, but it's also really important to know that that cycle works in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. You can do a teeny tiny thing and start to impact, for instance, your hidden hunger for rest. Start to get more sleep or start to get better sleep. And there are so many things you don't have to do. There are so many things that will just get better on their own. And you can take what's a negative cycle and start to make it move in the opposite direction. And that is so much fun, right?
I love that. Yes. Yeah. And just going back to your point earlier of it's often the boring basics, and you're so right. Like with anything, not just nutrition related. So we like the fancy, sexy sounding new thing, detox, whatever, blah. But it is, you know, the basics most of the time, whether that comes to your training, your nutrition, your relationships, even the basics like listening or so, but no one wants to hear that they need to work on the basics. But yeah, going back to your point also of sleep, I mean, that's such a big impact, even from a physiological point. Mm-hmm. We know the research shows so clearly that when we're sleep deprived, we crave more processed foods for one, and therefore we tend to overconsume, particularly carbs and fats. And so that's such a big point. And I mean, while it sounds easy, or I get that people say like, hey, my day is already so packed, I don't see how I could get sleep in longer or go to bed earlier or whatever. But even there, 10 minutes make a big difference, or improving the quality of your sleep, keeping phones and screens and whatever out of the bedroom, that kind of stuff. I'm so big on that. And I think those little things can really go a long way. I would like to hear a little bit more about the hidden hungers. And so just for people to potentially, you know, identify with them as well, more finding out. So you mentioned one being rest, potentially. I could imagine another one being love, maybe, because I, from my, you know, loneliness eating, or a feeling of loneliness does cause people to eat comfort eat, I guess, at times as well, from what I hear in my experience also sometimes, or other things I would imagine might be frustration or something like that. Tell us more about the hidden hungers.
Well, there are five main hidden hungers that I've identified that show up in different kinds of eating. So, and I really want to repeat this. Don't let this overwhelm you. If it sounds like you have all these, just go take the quiz. It's free. You take it. It'll simplify things. But hunger for stress relief. So that tends to show up as stress eating, obviously, and it's triggered by stress. when it comes to hunger for rest, we talked about, right? And so that's going to show up as eating for energy or eating because you're too tired to do anything else, right? You're just, it's just the easiest solution. And figuring out what kind of rest you need and how to treat that. Like you said, hidden hungers, there is always a reason you overeat. And sometimes it's an emotional reason. Sometimes we eat emotionally because we're exhausted, but we're actually hungrier when we are exhausted. I think if that shows up as your primary hidden hunger, don't ignore it because everything you try is going to be harder. I'm watching you nod as I'm talking, right? There's also a hidden hunger for compassion and self-kindness. And I think that may be where that love piece that you were talking about comes in. And that's one that people really have a hard time understanding. But it often shows up if you are doing, well, the way it shows up with eating is if you are doing eating to avoid. So if you are doing mindless eating or eating on autopilot or eating to numb yourself, there is a real good chance that you have a hidden hunger for compassion. And what does that look like? Well, yeah, if you have been around the cycle, the diet cycle a few times or more, you probably are very hard on yourself. You probably beat yourself up. You probably call yourself lazy and stupid and you didn't try hard enough. You don't have enough willpower and all of that stuff. I mean, just feel how it feels in your body to hear me say that. All of that stuff also contributes to the ongoing overeating and the ongoing cycle. And also it makes it very difficult to be curious and to start to explore what the reason might really be. So that hidden hunger for compassion, so important. And nobody really talks about that. So that's a big one to pay attention to. There's a hidden hunger for self-care and me time that can be triggered by being too busy, right? Having a packed schedule or constant multitasking. So if you're comfort eating, or if you find that you're always eating as a reward, that's something to look at. That may be a piece of it. And we started talking about emotional eating, but it's really the last hidden hunger, which is, I call it a hidden hunger for emotional effectiveness. It's a hunger to just be able to do something effective with your feelings. And of course, that looks like emotional eating when it happens. But I think you can see that you might be the most brilliant person who on a good day feels so effective with emotions. And if you have some of this other stuff swirling around, you know, something happens and it's just one thing too many, or you just can't, I just can't. Right? So it's not always about, I'm not good with emotions. It often is a combination of all of these things, and emotions become the tipping point or the last straw, you know?
It is so tricky because food really is such an easy dopamine hit, essentially. So on a day where everything, where you, as you say, maybe you have coped with 95 things and then the last five things trickle in and you're just like, oh my gosh, that's too much. And
chocolate. Yeah.
That's causing you to want to grab that because it would be immediate relief. And again, going back to physiology, it also only makes sense. Like our body literally, you know, if we are in that high cortisol state and then we're consuming something, particularly carbs or so, that it inherently brings down the cortisol. So from a physiological perspective, I also don't want people to think, you who are listening to this, they need to just muscle through it and not eat anything. That's definitely not what we're saying. I usually try to direct people towards, you know, let's look for good quality food, because if we have some fiber in there as well, some protein in there as well, you're so much less likely to overeat on sweet potato and broccoli and whatever, or even a sweet potato brownie, than you might be to overeat on something super, super processed, like chips that are designed for you to overeat and to have a really hard time to stop. So I do think, especially when it comes to that hunger for rest or for more energy, I guess on the flip side, I think thinking, hey, in this case, I just need to abstain and not eat, is not necessarily a good way to go about it. Instead, thinking like, what can I eat to nourish my body in a relaxed state, maybe practicing some of the smaller things like I'm going to take a few deep breaths. I'm going to have my lunch outside in the sun instead of on my by my computer, shoveling it in while I'm typing up some emails, and maybe approaching it from that perspective. I don't know. Maybe you can share some practical strategies with us that you like to. And of course, as we said, there are so many facets to it. So of course, we can't be like, here are the top three. But on average, what are some things that you would advise someone who has done that, or who is doing that awareness piece, who's regularly pausing and trying to detect patterns and is like, okay, I know I'm doing it. What now?
So I'm pausing and I'm starting to see the pattern. Is that where we are?
Yes. Yeah. If someone has kind of detected the pattern, and maybe they're even a step further where they're like, I'm realizing I'm just, it's actually a hunger for rest, or it's actually a hunger for that compassion, something like that. And so they're even at that step, let's say.
Yeah. So one of the things to be really clear about with food habits, and so many of them happen at the end of the day. And you know why they happen? I mean, I know you know why they happen at the end of the day. They happen at the end of the day because we are out of bandwidth in so many ways. And we've used everything up. And also, I often think about morning routines. Like, you know, you can Google morning routines and probably find 20 bajillion morning routines that could take 6 hours of what all these highly successful people supposedly do in the mornings. Like, we have learned that morning routines are really powerful. And what we do is we start the day and maybe we set ourselves up for success. Maybe we have some good thoughts, or we do some meditation, or we do some yoga, or we do, you know, whatever. But then the day goes on and we just get more drained and more drained and more drained and more drained. And then the overeating happens at the end of the night, or at the end of the workday, or somewhere in whatever you call the end. And we get so mad at ourselves. That is the hardest set of circumstances you could possibly create to make a change in your eating. And so once you start to get clear on what the reasons are, using some of that compassion and starting to think, okay, what is the earliest? If my only goal was to shift this pattern a few degrees, not cure it, you know, not wake up tomorrow and it was gone, but if I just wanted to shift it a little bit, what is the earliest place that I could do something that might be helpful? Right? So when you had your example of, I get through the day and I'm too busy to eat lunch. Okay, maybe I make a goal that I have to eat lunch every day. Maybe that would be helpful. But I think, honestly, it would probably be more helpful to start asking, how is it that I don't get to eat at lunch, right? Is it that I'm too busy in the morning and I don't pack it, or I don't prioritize packing it? Do you pack lunch for everybody else and you don't get one? Which I caught myself doing at one point when my kids were little. I would get to work and I'd be like, how do I not have a lunch? I made lunches all morning long, right? So is that the pivot point? Or do you bring a lunch and then you get too busy and then you get too hungry and then you don't really want it? And so you go to the vending machine and then you never ate your lunch. Like, everybody has their own pattern, but I really think it's so much more powerful to try to intervene when you have some resources on board, right? Before it feels like you are just ready to eat the entire contents of the refrigerator. So I would play with those things. Where could I, the first, I have a group program where I help women with this, and people come into the program, well, not so much because they know me, but it is pretty common for people to come into a program like that, ready to be like, okay, what's the food plan? Tell me about the food. Tell me how am I supposed to eat? Tell me. And what I always tell people is, food is so important, but if we don't teach you how to listen to yourself and pay attention to what you need and how to take your power back, you're going to fall into the same old pattern again. And so really thinking about, if I want to take my power back from this overeating, where do I feel powerful enough to start to make changes? It is not at the end of the day when you have collapsed in the recliner and you already have the Netflix on and the bowl, you know, sitting in front of you. That's too late. That's expecting too much of yourself.
I want to start from the beginning because there was so much awesome things in there. But the first thing you said was, so many people have a morning routine, or, you know, we can Google morning routine however much we like. The issue is, a lot of us don't have an evening routine.
We don't midday or an after lunch routine, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Even like a wind down routine from, okay, before I step into the house, maybe I can take a loop around the block to de-stress first or whatever. Like we don't have a routine for that half of the day. And so to me, it's not surprising that it's often the most resource draining time as well. Of course, add to that, you know, kids being cranky after school, whatever you want. But in general, if there is no structure, no plan, then we're going to resort to, I'm just going to do what's comfortable or what I want to do to soothe one of these hungers right now. So I would dock onto there as well and try to maybe bring a bit more structure and routine into that half, as rigid as it sounds, because a lot of people probably think that is exactly why I don't want to have structure in that time. I want to just relax and be able to do something that I want to do instead of being tied to my work schedule or so. But for me, something I think I have learned is structure, at least a loose structure, equals freedom, because you don't need to make decisions in the moment.
Well, what you just said is so powerful. It got me, because I do. Our brains are so amusing. If you can pay attention to them, I mean, they just trick us all the time. So our brain will say, I don't want the structure. I want to relax. But that's not what happens. What happens is I was just talking in the group coaching in this program, we were talking about like, what is your switching gears look like? And there were, you know, especially people who are still working from home or have transitioned to that, shifting gears means clicking end meeting on the Zoom call, getting up from their desk, walking down the hall, walking into the kitchen and deciding it's time to make dinner, right? There's no transition. And so what we do, I talk a lot about transitions with my clients, because what we end up doing is using food as a transition. We use going and staring into the pantry as a way to slow things down. We use getting something to eat, even if you don't taste it, which is usually what happens. You're not even enjoying the food, but it's a way to like give yourself a break before you go on to the next thing. We are living in a world where everything is overlapping now. And we need slowing down. We need transitions. We need those routines. The me time, the self-care, and the mindless eating that happens, it doesn't fuel you the way your brain is telling you. It's not the reward. It's not the treat. Because ask yourself, are you even tasting it? Right?
Yeah, really. This, like, I think if people should walk away with one thing, it should be like thinking about that transition time, because there are so many aspects to that. Even mentally, you know, you might still be cooking, or you might be cooking dinner and then answering a couple of work texts or so that just come in. Your mind is obviously still there, maybe also with the kids and their homework or whatever, but maybe making it a habit or routine that once you click end on that Zoom call, you put your work phone away, or, you know, you put at least your private phone on silent, because now it's family time, maybe grabbing the dog and going for a walk, or just on your own and getting some fresh air and then coming back home. And it's like, okay, this is a reset. Again, like you said, it's family time. I think that would be life-changing for someone who struggles with that, or who has caught themselves thinking like, I didn't even taste that. I didn't even enjoy that. It was literally just, I think you mentioned, or you named it like numbing or avoiding or something mm-hmm. like that. I don't know if that falls into that category, but yeah, certainly often, I think it's very common, unfortunately, to have patterns like this.
And it can be so simple. It can be, it's lovely if you can go outside. I'll tell you, if I set a goal to do that, I'll look outside and it'll be pouring rain and wind and that's not going to happen. But it could be as simple as having a routine after work. I shut things down. I go wash my face or I change my clothes, or I let the dog out, or maybe I make myself a cup of tea. Maybe I am hungry. Maybe I have a little snack instead of saying, I don't have time for that. I got to figure out dinner and I got to be working on dinner. And then you wonder why you snacked so much mm-hmm. while you were cooking dinner that you're not hungry. Mm-hmm. Right. A client I had called, because I talk a lot about pauses, and she said she was overwhelmed by it because she was busy and it felt like another thing to do. And then the more we talked about it, and she came up with these little simple things. She said, you know what? It was the word pause that got me. That sounded too big. This is really about adding a comma. Wow. I'm just adding a comma in the sentence. So it can be that small. And I really like that.
Mm-hmm. You know? Absolutely. That's such a mindset shift. Absolutely. Like, I'm just going to a comma and then I can keep going. Giving yourself permission to take it at your own pace as well. Because the other thing you mentioned earlier was like the best food plan isn't going to work if you can't follow it, if it doesn't work in your certain situations. And that's precisely also why I don't work with meal plans. I don't think they are sustainable. I think sometimes giving someone an idea, like if someone literally comes to you, has no idea what a quote unquote healthy breakfast or healthy snack might be. Absolutely. Like those are some sample or this some ideas. Cool. But just saying you need to eat exactly 100 grams of this and 50 grams of that and blah, blah, blah. That doesn't work long time because we have something called a life. And every now and then you might want to go out for dinner. Every now and then you might not feel what's on your freaking plan and you just have a different craving. So I really like that you're practicing that with your, or you're teaching that to your clients also, because of course, it seems like the simple thing. As a client, I just want to follow a plan. Give me a plan. I will execute that. But as a client, we might struggle to think ahead as in like, well, what am I going to do when I'm on vacation? Or what am I going to do during the holidays when there are different foods around and temptation is everywhere? Or so, you know, it's so much more complicated than that.
It's a relationship. You are going to be in a relationship with food for the rest of your life. And if you set it up to be some miserable thing or some really hard thing where there's a checklist, you know, and you have to be, is that the kind of relationship you want to have for the rest of your life? And I'm just going to keep quoting members of my group because they're just it's just an amazing group of people. But one of them said, why would I want a relationship with food that I needed to cheat on? Why would I need cheat days if I had a good relationship with food? Right. I wouldn't do that in my dating life. I don't.
Yeah.
Like yes. It's so starting again, it really has to start with you, and psychology and physiology are not completely separate, that your brain is inside your body. Mm-hmm. Figuring out what's going to work for you, figuring out why things haven't worked for you in the past, figuring out, we haven't talked about it, but we all have an inner rebel, right? And when we eat to rebel, or like, you're not going to tell me what to eat, or don't tell me I can only have 2 grams, I'm going to have, you know, whatever. We got to figure out what is going to work for you and what is the relationship with food that you want to have forever. And when you figure that out, and when you feel powerful again, and when you're not setting yourself up to always have to be strong and in control, it becomes so much easier to make choices that you help your, right? The kind of choices that you lay out for people, then it becomes like, oh, I would like to do that. That would feel good. I hate waking up with gastric reflux in the middle of the night, right? I hate, oh, okay. Then it feels like a choice instead of a rule that you're being forced to follow.
Love that. And in regards to the inner rebel, that brought up a thought in me, because I took a course on a little bit like emotional eating. Was just a 12-week course thingy a few years ago. And they were talking about the 5 core needs that us humans have, or according to this anyway. And it was about we equally crave control or a sense of control. We also crave, or you might call it also certainty, kind of knowing what's coming up. And the second one was, I think, love and connection. Another one was growth, personal, fulfillment, that sort of thing. Recognition from others, I think, was another one. And then, which sounds contrary to the first one, also a craving for variety, for different things. And mm-hmm. in this course, they were saying that, of course, while we have all a little bit of that within us, it's to varying degrees. So people that might identify as control freaks, they love, you know, knowing, hey, in 4 months' time, I'm going on vacation, Lisa, how should I handle my nutrition during that? They might plan ahead for that. And other people, they don't even know what they want to eat in 2 days' time or tomorrow or tonight for dinner. So yeah. I think that kind of knowing, and I don't know how much that played into your 5 hungers, but it feels like it reflects that a little bit there. You know, someone who might be craving for compassion or having a hunger for compassion. Maybe their need for love and connection isn't filled in that sense. And that can give them a cue and, okay, what do I actually need to go and seek? Maybe I can make a phone call to my best friend and tell her about my day. And that will help already relieve some of that pressure. And she will make me feel heard. And then I don't have that hunger, that literal hunger for compassion so much anymore, or vice versa. If you you want a little bit more variety in your life, but your life is so strict, how can you bring in more variety with your food, perhaps, but in a healthy way, so that you don't feel like you need to just pull up the middle finger and be like, no, I don't follow the 2 grams or whatever that Lisa told me. I'm going to have the whole package of it. I don't know. Is that something that that goes into your practice as well? Or I don't even know too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you're also talking about is that when you deal with this, with the hidden hunger model, it's not just that your relationship with food gets better. It's that your life gets better because mm-hmm. you are addressing all sorts of things. The other way it can work, which is really cool, and it happens more often than you would think, is that, so for instance, people come into my program, it's called Your Missing Piece. People come into that program, we don't start with the food. We start with taking your power back. We start with getting clear on what motivates you. We start with all those different pieces and what your hidden hungers are and how you can start taking better care of your hidden hungers. And what happens is that as you start focusing on the hidden hungers, even if you are not addressing the food at all, the power that food has starts to deflate. Mm-hmm. And so we have this really fun experience that happens inside the program where I'm thinking, okay, so I'll give you an example of somebody who came into the program and she wanted to stop. She was binging in the afternoons, in the evenings. That's what she wanted to stop. And she really thought when she came into the program, we would be hitting this hard. Mm-hmm. Well, she started down the road with module one, and what she became really aware of was how hard she is on herself and how critical she is on herself. And she really started focusing on that. And she kind of put the food stuff over to the side a little bit. And then one day in the group, we were talking about, and it was helping. She was feeling really good about the stuff that she was doing. But one day in the group, we were talking about what she had accomplished in the program and what had changed for her. And she started listing things. And it started with, you know, I'm not so hard on myself anymore. I'm taking more time for myself. And that feels really good. I'm not so stressed out. And this long list of like feel good things, which really did feel good. And it wasn't until she had listed a number of things, like more than 10, that she kind of got this look on her face. And she said, I don't binge anymore. And I said, what? She said, well, when I came into the program, I was binging every evening. And I just realized it's been like 2 or 3 times in the last 4 months that I have binged. But that's the key part I want you to hear. It is, I just realized she was not efforting for mm-hmm. these 4 months to stop binging. She wasn't every day waking up and thinking, I will not binge this evening, right? She got focused on the other things, which were really the core things. And what happens when you do that, when you address your hidden hungers, is the urges go away.
Wow.
Right.
I got goosebumps again. This is so powerful. I read a quote this morning and it went something like, in order to get the results, don't focus on the results, focus on the habits, focus on the, you know, the qualities that person has that obtains the result, and you will get the results. And that's
exactly,
she didn't even think about that. Maybe the first few weeks when she got into the program, that was her main focus, but you shifted the focus to everything around it. And then she realized, and that is so, so beautiful. I really want to encourage anyone listening and to check out Melissa's program. So it is called the Your Missing Piece program. I'm sure you have all the links on your website, on your social media handles are Too Much on Her Plate. I love that. And all the platforms, Facebook, Instagram. I will obviously make sure to link that in the show notes as well. So please go and follow Melissa. Honestly, really, really great content on there as well. And I think you mentioned another, is it a free program or is that the quiz, which is called the Freedom from Overeating Roadmap? Is that like a freebie? Well,
That's a brand new, yes, it's absolutely free. It's a resource we created because I also have a podcast, so which is also too much on her plate. You guys can look that up. And I was getting a lot of requests around, okay, I really like your podcast, but what are the must listen to episodes, or how do I get started, or how? So I just put together it's a roadmap. It's the Freedom from Overeating roadmap. If you go to toomuchonherplate.com/map, you can get that. And what that will give you, it'll give you directions for how to access the quiz and how to take that. And then a roadmap of these are some different podcast episodes. It's also a great resource for busy people because you can use it while you're multitasking. I am not a fan of multitasking, but this is one of those places where it works really well. And so you can just kind of choose your own adventure. These are some podcast episodes that have been really helpful to other people that they said, you've got to put this in the roadmap. You can go take a look. You can listen to them in any order that you want to, but it just kind of lets you immerse yourself into a different way of thinking. And brains need that. Like listening to this and hearing, oh, you're right, there's something here. I do have a reason. I guarantee you by the end of the day, you're going to have hit, I don't know, 20, 30 messages about why it's a diet or a food plan that you need, or you should just be weighing yourself, or you should just be harder on yourself. So the more that people can surround themselves with resources that are empowering and helpful, like your podcast, and, you know, the better, the more nourished your brain and your spirit are going to be. And that is going to help you so much in this journey.
100%. Thank you, Melissa. Thank you so much for your time, for coming on here. I really, really appreciate it. Maybe we can do this again sometime. I feel like we could have kept on talking for quite a while.
I think we probably could. Thank you, Lisa. It's been really fun.
Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, or share the episode on social. Very much appreciated. You can also follow us on Instagram at Nutrition Coaching and Life, or head to our website, www.nutritioncoachingandlife.com, where we provide more valuable content. Have a wonderful day. Now go out and work on your best self.